episode log number 41, stardate 42695.3, Pen Pals.
Hello, Star Trek The Next Generation fans. It's time for another episode of Galaxy Class, a TNG podcast. I'm your host, Kerry. I'm joined by Sherry and Kirk, as always. Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
So we're all set. I was going to pop myself off, open a beer here before we started the podcast, but my other half seems to have drank all of the Keiths, the Alexander Keiths in the house.
Louie.
Yeah, blame it on the dog, eh? Yeah. Speaking of that, I have to say something.
Uh-oh.
I have to apologize to our listeners. There were errors last week. Errors.
Errors?
Yeah. First of all,
Louie.
During the synopsis, Sherry referred at one point to Worf as Will.
Uh-oh. I did, because I was writing everything as shorthand, and I was writing W for Wesley, W for Worf, and then I usually write R for Riker, but because there were two Rikers, I wrote W for Will.
W for what the fuck.
Yeah.
And then and we didn't pick up on this during recording, I twice referred to, when I was making my views about Pulaski possibly marrying Will's father, twice I referred to her as being Will's mother-in-law. She would not. She would be a stepmother. Yes. So I'm surprised that the Trek fans didn't write it in their emails right away.
Yeah.
They let us go with those two.
I actually didn't check the email.
They didn't check it. You haven't checked them. So
yeah, I was afraid.
I was afraid.
Hate.
The inbox is full. Full.
How dare you?
You call yourselves Trek fans.
We're Trek fans, hey, not genealogy fans.
You know what? We were drunk. So.
Sure.
There.
Sure.
And high.
and high. On life. Right, Kirk?
No.
Carbon
would be, monoxide.
Kirk's like, no, that would be marijuana.
Yeah.
All right. So today we're going to discuss Pen Pals. I don't know about you two, but for me, this is one of the kind of the lower point in the season.
Oh yeah,
you might as well thrown half the episode in the garbage.
This season,
exactly. That's everything to do with Wesley. I wrote blah 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 Wesley.
Well, see, this season.
That's my notes.
This season been rolling along pretty good. Season two so far is actually better than I remember it being, in my
yes
kerfuddled memory of Star Trek: The Next Generation, where everything just kind of. I remember that the really good episodes, they have no stripes on their shoulders. That's how I know it's not season two. You can always recognize season one and season two. Season one, stripe on the shoulders, no beard on Riker. Season two, stripe on the shoulders, beard on Riker, Worf in yellow.
Yeah.
Geordi in yellow.
Pulaski,
yeah. But season two has been rolling along pretty good. And then we get to this one, and this one almost felt like a season one type of episode where
started off, and honestly I wasn't sure what to expect, but I started off and I realized that the first like 3 minutes were about Wesley and his future.
So there's your,
and I actually counted it was from 5:57 to 8:47, and then I stopped counting because I realized I was going to be doing a lot of counting. I was like,
so this episode was directed by Winrik Colby. Teleplay by Melinda M. Snodgrass, and based on a story by Hannah Louise Shearer. It aired May 1st, 1989. Guest starred Diana Muldaur as Dr. Pulaski, Nicholas Cascone as Davies, Nikki Cox as Sarjenka, Anne H. Gillespie as Hildebrandt, Whitney Rideback as Allens, and Comini as Chief O'Brien.
The Enterprise is studying a series of planetary breakups in Salkundi Drema sector. Each planet is suffering cataclysms, reducing it to rubble. Riker calls a meeting of the senior officers and suggests that Wesley should lead the team that is investigating the planet. Wesley has reservations about commanding officers who are older than he is, but after several reassurances, he becomes more confident in his role. Wesley's team discovers that unusually high levels of dilithium in the planet's crusts have formed a matrix which creates a piezoelectric effect that tears the planets apart. Data has been speaking with Sarjenka, a member of a pre-warp species that lives on Drema 4. After 8 weeks of communication, Picard orders Data to terminate contact with the girl because it violates the Prime Directive. During a meeting of senior staff, the crew is torn on whether or not they should let a sentient race die. Picard orders the ship to leave the system, but Data plays a clip of Sarjenka pleading for help. Picard decides that since it was a direct plea, the Prime Directive no longer applies. Data beams down to Drema 4 to meet Sarjenka and tell her and her family to travel to a safe region on the planet, but discovers they've already left. Sarjenka returns to get the transmitter she was using to communicate with Data. Data decides he can't leave her on the planet due to the geological activity and beams her onto the Enterprise. The Enterprise fires modified probes to destroy the matrix and restore geological stability to the planet. Picard orders Dr. Pulaski to erase Sarjenka's memory of her time on the ship. While in sickbay, Sarjenka picks up a piece of a Lannan Singer stone, which sings a different song for anyone who touches it. After Sarjenka's memory is erased, Data returns her to her home planet, but leaves the Lannan Singing Stone as a token of her experiences on the Enterprise.
So in classic TNG style, this episode opens with Riker telling Worf no.
Yeah.
You just asked a question. Like, come on. Poor Worf.
What do you say? No, it's not malevolence, or it's not...
I don't remember. All I remember was like, it was...
He didn't actually say no, but he's like...
It was almost a confrontational tone.
Yeah.
Though.
Yeah.
Shut up, Worf. Don't you know any better?
This isn't some force. It's nature at work.
Yeah. Okay.
Something like that.
Okay, human.
Let's figure this out in the holodeck.
Take
huh?
that tone with me again, and we're gonna go do some calisthenics.
Yeah.
Hey.
You can take your ultimate martial art, and I'll get my bat lift.
We'll see
who wins.
Go take your giant Q-tip, and we'll see what happens. Yeah. Sorry. Go back
still
to the
angry
previous
about that.
We're still...
I'm going to be angry about that till the very last episode.
The ultimate martial art, and then you have war for the batleth. Okay, well, let's just put everything into perspective here.
Yeah.
Very interesting, this episode. We have an on-location shoot. Picard with the horse. Star Trek goes outside.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen very often.
I guess it was more practical to go outside with the horse.
I remember the cast saying, like, Jonathan Frakes said they were always... in the studio, and they had that one, they called the Planet Hell, which they always redress for planets. So whenever a script called for them to actually go outside in an episode, they were all like, oh my God, we got to go outside. Of course, this one was only Picard and Deanna. But,
very minor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for really not advancing anything.
Yeah.
Having nothing to do with the story.
Just Picard talking about animals.
Yeah.
Data gets to go outside, too.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Data gets to go outside. I forgot.
For all of 2 seconds.
Just to pet it.
You know, speaking of
photonic horse.
I had the chuckle when Deanna's telling the story about how she had a cat once. And the cat didn't get along. Even cats don't like Luxana.
Yeah.
it's pretty bad. And then my next note is, Wesley has a storyline, ... All right.
Yeah.
That's all I wrote was, all right.
Oh, why is he in charge of this team?
I'm like, why are these senior officers discussing this in the observation lounge? How important is this? Let's all have a meeting on the fucking boy's future.
Yeah.
And then Wesley's going to command a science team.
Why?
He's
an acting ensign. Yeah. Why is he in charge?
And then he looks
why is he allowed on the bridge?
He looks at Riker, I think, and go,
boy.
I think it's Riker.
Sir? That one? That line?
A team, sir? This is going to command a team.
Yeah.
This with his little clenched fist.
And why, why are his fists clenched? Why are they clenched? Is he going to a fight?
Awkward.
Yeah. Do I have to battle these people in my group?
Again, it's, what do I do with my hands? What do I do with my arms? Just
just awkward rigidly, all the time.
Rigidly at the sides.
Always awkward.
Always.
I had to have another chuckle with Worf when he comes out on the bridge and Data's... He's tripping over Data's stuff. You could tell Worf just wanted to tell him, you're cluttering up my bridge.
Yeah.
Another thing with Wesley. I know you made this point before, Kirk. What are wrong with his pants? Why are they open at the back like that? What's wrong with his pants?
Oh, no. I know why.
Kirk, stop it. Careful.
I don't think I need to say anymore. I think that...
Yeah, I think that was pretty self...
yeah.
Everyone has just knew exactly what you were going... I would hope. I have a question. When Data's first... communicating with what's her Sarjenka, and he asked the computer, and I always wondered this on TNG, and he asked the computer, like, put it through the universal translator. Wouldn't Data be programmed with a universal translator?
You'd think that he would be able wouldn't to he do that
know
stuff.
All of these languages? Would he know every language that there is to know? And if he wasn't programmed with that, you'd think he'd just learn them. We don't need a universal translator when we go off the ship anymore, because I'm here. It's all good. Universal translator, if you want to actually hear them speak English, I guess. Because that's apparently why we hear them speak English.
Yeah. Because even when they're, like, away from the ship in the middle of nowhere, people who don't speak English speak English.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Must be
it was just a question.
Must be implants.
Then how come whenever the Klingons speak Klingon, you can hear them
speak
Klingon?
Exactly. Exactly. Well, because that's an important language. But they're not speaking, when they're speaking Klingon, they're not speaking to other Federation members. They're speaking to each other.
Usually.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So it goes back to the, and plus Klingon's cool.
Yeah.
I had to calm myself at this point. Well, because we had something very disturbing happen at this point of the episode. And I had to just sit there and go, just breathe, breathe. We had a scene between Pulaski and Wesley. Woosa.
I wrote something about that scene.
Just calm down. Did you?
Yes. I have something to say about that scene.
Are we going to be pulled off the air for you saying this? Or
Someone might get angry. No. I'm just saying that it's a good thing that Wesley is human and white, because I doubt she'd be as...
Here's a question.
I doubt she'd be as supportive of
him. Well, yeah.
We'll say.
I don't have ridges. I don't have forehead ridges.
Yeah.
Or pale skin. Or just be different in any way.
Yeah.
You know what? We sit here. Are we hypocrites?
Sure.
Because we're sitting here and we're constantly putting down Pulaski for being a racist and a bigot and all this stuff. Yet our other podcast is named after the biggest racist, most bigoted person in Star Trek history. The legendary. Dr. Leonard Bones McCoy. We love Bones, but we hate her. They're the same person. They just have different parts.
I don't care much for Bones.
Well, Bones is...
He's comic relief.
Yeah.
And
Bones, the thing with Bones is his is always directed towards Spock. He picks on Spock.
Yeah.
He doesn't go after everybody.
And you find out, obviously, through the course of the series that he does that because he loves Spock like a brother. Spock and Kirk are his two closest friends. So he's, like any brother, he's picking on his brother, right?
Yeah.
With her, it's different. She's just mean.
Yeah. Like, well, as long as you're not human, she's mean. For some reason, she... And then later she goes on to continue her racism and point it at the very wrong person.
Yeah.
Yep. Saying the very worst thing to him.
We'll get to that.
The
point.
Very worst. Yeah.
if I happen to glance over it there, interrupt me and tell me and make sure we make a point of it.
Yes.
And then Sherry and I were both, 8 weeks went by in a span of about 2 seconds here or something.
Yeah.
Because didn't Data say he was corresponding with her for eight weeks?
8 weeks. I couldn't understand the timeline in this episode at all. It was all over the place. Because, like, was this stupid geological bullshit that Wesley was doing? Did it take 8 weeks?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
It must have.
I guess so.
Well, I was sort of wondering, the timeline got me a little fuzzy there, and actually I think it's because it made it seem like him contacting her had something to do with what he was doing on the bridge when Worf was questioning him about what he was doing. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it had anything to do with it.
I think it did, because it was modifying the sensors.
Yes. Do you want me to get to that now, then?
A scientific observation?
It's a little bit of science, yes.
Okay, yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Now, he said he was modifying them to look for, peaks and dips in the magnetic field, organic molecules, and energetic cosmic rays. Now, she was using RF radio frequencies.
Right.
And they don't really fall in any of these categories, because you know what the magnetic field is. Nobody really does, because they call it virtual fucking light. Magnetic waves are virtual photons absorbing and popping into existence, but it has nothing really to do with radio frequencies. I don't even know what organic molecules. I don't understand how he's it was really confusing to me, this, what he was, because how are you looking for magnetic fields and organic molecules with one change to a sensor, because they're like broadly different things, right?
Yeah.
You'd have to have light go off the organic molecule for it to be sensed,
right?
And then the energetic cosmic rays, well, that's actually a few things, but none of them have anything to do with radio frequencies. There's protons that just whiz, protons and atomic nuclei. They call them alpha particles, and that's like it's just the nucleus of a helium atom with the electron stripped away, or beta particles, which are an electron. And these things usually come from like black holes or supernovas, stuff outside of our solar system. But yeah, no. There's nothing he said that in his rearrangement of the sensors that would allow him to see that. But you'd think they'd be scanning for radio frequencies all the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All the time. Although they don't use radio frequencies anymore, they use subspace. But you think they'd be scanning for radio frequencies.
Someone was asleep at the wheel.
Yeah. Someone was asleep. That's the only way I can explain it, because where'd the 8 weeks go? And what he said really has nothing to do with what he detected, which is was strange to me.
So, Kate, now Data is first contact for this race, right?
Yeah.
So this is the whole conundrum of this episode, is the Prime Directive, and you know, at what point are you actually interfering in their natural development, and do you let them die?
Yeah, do you just walk on by like an observer, or do you take part in
Well, I think that if they all died, then they wouldn't have very much to offer anyone.
This is true.
Yeah, so, you'd never figure out those awesome doors.
I know.
Those doors were awesome, both seconds of them.
Yeah.
But they were pretty cool.
Yeah. They were better than the Enterprise doors.
Yep.
They look cool. I want one of those.
I like 10 forward here. We have our first glimpse of Riker. Riker being his charming Riker self here. And 10 forward putting the moves on a crew member.
So
and we have a Riker maneuver.
He said something very witty there.
Did he? What did he say?
I don't know. Oh. But she was loving it.
Yeah, she was loving it. She probably saw that the Riker maneuver. She was all digging the Riker maneuver there. Yeah. And then Wesley, I had to laugh here. Well, he sat down. Kirk, you would understand why I would laugh at this. Because he sits down, he tells him about how he suggested to do this one thing, and his team said no. And then he looked at Riker and he said, maybe I was just picking nits.
Yes.
Now, I don't know. Is that really... Because nitpicking...
Yes.
And I always made the joke of I'm picking nits whenever I'm nitpicking. Is that an actual phrase?
Yes.
Picking nits?
Yes.
What are nits and why would you be picking them?
It's like a little parasite.
Okay.
Gnats?
Yeah.
No, gnats. Nits.
So you're actually physically picking things?
Pick them off monkeys? I don't know.
Okay. We'll have to look up where the phrase nitpicking came from.
Yes.
No, picking,
I've been known to
picking
do this.
Nits is something that's said. Usually, it's nitpicking.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. I've always heard the person say nitpicking.
See, yeah. Picking yeah. Nits. Oh my God! Whenever you search on Google, it goes picking nits out of hair, definition, out lice, monkeys, picking nits. There you go, monkeys. Because
okay. I've been known to pick some nits during some of these episodes.
I've never groomed anybody though for nits.
No, no,
no.
But we've torn some Star Trek episodes yeah.
lice
apart.
Eggs.
Yeah.
Lice.
Nice. That's a good image. Okay. I was just curious. I've never heard someone say picking nits before. I've always heard most normal humans say nitpicking.
I had a comment on that Wes Riker scene, and it went like, holy shit, Wes, nut up. Fuck, stop asking Riker for advice.
Oh, these pep talks, they got really old.
I will say this, though. Riker gives Wesley words to live by.
Yeah.
What would Picard do?
WWPD, baby.
That's how I live my life.
For I got every a what decision, would Jesus do sign, and I
cross out Jesus and put Picard.
Jesus and put Picard in
there. Oh. Kirk, wait, okay.
Oh my God.
I have to deviate for a second. Did you see recently Uh-oh. The post that was going around Facebook of the science test, Kirk?
No. Oh, the creation.
It was a science. Yep. It was a science exam. I believe it was in a must have been in a Catholic school,
or a school that was forced to
Christian,
teach creationism.
A Christian yeah. school.
And it was a true and false. And a couple of the questions were: number one, the Earth is 5 billion years old, and it was false. Correct. The dinosaurs. Another one about the dinosaurs that was wrong. And then it said the dinosaurs lived with people. Person circle true, and it was correct. On what day did God create the dinosaurs? And it was the sixth day, and that was correct. And this is a science class.
Yeah.
You can't call sorry. Yourself a
which,
science class.
Which day
I'm
was
sorry.
It? The sixth.
Huh?
Did you say
everybody knows he made dinosaurs on the fourth.
That. Yeah, really.
Right after, well, no, it was actually the second one, was right after light. And then, you know, right in between light and fish.
True,
I don't know.
True or false, dinosaurs lived with people.
Yeah.
See, that, how
is I know,
that?
I know, true, right?
How do you call that? Yep. So, religion, I have a word for it with you, please. Stay away from science, and science will stay away from you.
Yes.
Oh, there's another page.
You don't bother us, and we won't bother you.
There's another page.
There was another page.
There is.
Oh, we're going way off topic here. I just got to. We're talking about a science-y show here, and I got. When I saw this, it blew my mind.
Sorry. Whom should we always trust? God. Mm-hmm. With 4 exclamation points.
Oh, with 4. If it was with 3, would it have been wrong?
What is the history?
Oh, no, you know what? That person just can't spell. They meant to put like dog.
Dog,
like,
dog, yeah, they're dyslexic.
Dog the bounty hunter?
Yeah. What is the history book of the universe? Bible.
Sorry.
Well, it does skip a couple of major events.
Of the universe.
But...
of the universe.
Oh, my God.
Seemed to be pretty focused on Earth there for a while, for good chunks anyway.
What did God tell Noah to build? An ark. True or false, Noah's ark looked like this. Okay, and it's a picture of a boat. Okay.
Well, possibly. Well,
I guess if there was if it was like a choice, one would be a boat, the other would be like a spaceship.
No, it's an actual photo. It's an actual photo of Noah's Ark.
Yeah.
No, but if it was multiple choice, the photos would be like a boat, a spaceship, a canoe,
and a car,
and a car. Well, no, a suburban. Yeah. So it could hold more. You know?
The average size of a dinosaur was A, giraffe, B, rhino, C, elephant. D, sheep.
And what was the correct answer there?
Well
I don't
sheep.
Even know that.
Sheep.
She had sheep circled, I think.
Well, I you know, there was okay. a lot of little dinosaurs out there, I'm sure. All right. You know, because the big right. ones had to eat the littler ones.
What caused there to be fossils?
Oh, God.
God.
Lightning?
God.
A global flood?
God.
Tornado? Evolution.
Definitely
well, it's not evolution.
Evolution.
I know that's not right.
A global flood.
A global, see, because the Noah, yeah. see what they did there?
Yeah.
See how they intertwined all that stuff?
Makes the dinosaurs must have been sinners.
Makes perfect sense. When I never thought about that way.
Oh, my gosh.
Dinosaurs were all
evolution's false. That made the flood made the fossils Don't you guys understand?
Okay, here's another one. Here's another one. Fossils are blank. Billions of dead
Fake.
Things.
Oh.
No, blank. Billions of dead things buried in rock. Oh, God. I can't, this child has terrible writing. Layered by water all over the earth. And then the last question is, the next time someone says the earth is billions or millions of years old, what can you say? Were you there?
But the next time someone says that Jesus made somebody rise out of the dead, we can say
Did
yes,
you
we
meet
were
him?
There.
It was in the Bible, yeah, though.
It was in the Bible, that's right.
Because that's the
I'm not going to go off on a religious tangent here, in, but I this is
that's
supposed
amazing.
To be a science class.
Yeah.
A science class. And folks, okay, you know what? Some stuff's been proven.
Yeah.
Some stuff. You know that whole age thing? They're pretty sure.
You know that gravity thing?
Yeah.
It's still a theory, but we're pretty sure it's right. We're pretty sure. Because sure. every time we,
have we
jump
good,
off a cliff, we die.
We have it on good authority that we're spot on that one.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. We'll get back to Star Trek now. I just had to ask Kirk if he had seen that because it was a science test to end all science tests. And yeah, I would have failed.
Just
I would have failed.
On.
I wouldn't have passed grade 2 science or whatever.
4.
Grade 4?
Yeah.
I would have, fourth grade science, I would have been done.
Don't, you know what? Whatever. I don't care. You want to be religious. That's great. It's fine
let's
with
just
me.
Not, let's just not but, mix the two.
Yeah, just don't go calling yourself science. Because science is about being objective, which is like the exact opposite of being religious.
Well, they objectively believe the Bible is truth. Literal. Yeah.
I'm not going to... I just can't because I can't. Because when I start, I can't stop.
Get angry.
So I just
get angry,
just
and then
can't.
I want to punch people.
Yeah,
I have see nothing. Against, see God, what do you do to me? You make me want to punch.
I
people.
Have nothing against religion or religious yeah, I, people. What I have stuff. Have what I don't like is that kind of stuff.
When they try and yeah,
you're too because these kids are going to grow up and know nothing.
Yeah,
nothing.
Just live by WWPD.
Yep, that's what you got to do. What would Picard do? Why do Picard's quarters look so weird? Why we've seen his quarters many times.
Not from that angle.
That's
it's
it looked like something Data would live in.
It's very technical. Like
yeah.
I wonder if there's like a button and it all spins into the wall.
Maybe. He picks up the red phone, then slides down his pole. Yeah. And changes into his other outfit. okay. All right. Now, Kirk. I'm gonna let you handle this one if you'd like.
Oh, I probably would like to.
Well, this is Pulaski's scene.
Oh, yes.
Where she makes the unfortunate error. Now,
I know. I can't see where I read it, but I know exactly what happened.
Okay. I'll turn it over to you here, and you can, with your...
Oh, yes. So here it is. Worf says the prime directive is not a matter of degrees. It's an absolute. So Pulaski calls him a coward.
Yep.
Worf.
Calls Worf a coward. Remember when Picard said that in First Contact and Worf nearly killed him?
Yeah.
And
like
actually
if you were anyone
and
else?
Actually told Picard, if you were any other man, I'd kill you where you stand.
Yeah.
So why didn't he kill her then?
Because it would have been too easy.
But that's the nerve.
The
nerve. And the courage. I'll give her that.
She's got... But you know, I would just like program a malfunction
like
in an airlock, so whenever she goes by, it just
doing that. It's like beating the Wookiee in chess. You just don't do it.
If you unless you need your arm to be removed.
Don't call the enormous Klingon a coward.
Yeah,
he might not take that right kindly.
Yeah,
he will break your frail old body in half.
Cowardly, cowardly.
Yeah, I wrote down here. Pulaski called Worf a coward. I've had just about enough of her. What are we at now? Five more episodes? Six
Something,
more episodes?
Yeah, we're well past halfway
and then we're,
now.
Then we're. I'm never going to be so happy to see Beverly
oh.
in all my life. Like, I love you. I love Beverly Crusher.
Yeah.
Well, in next season, she's a lot better because she's not like, my son.
Yeah. Hey, you think when Picard told Data to sever ties, and then Data went and played that audio.
Oh,
he knew what he was doing.
He was so I'm really surprised because he is so manipulative the whole way through this.
He was.
He was like,
he's
and he
learning
was like,
well.
Yeah, he was playing them like lore.
Yeah. 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 Okay, well, I'll just delete this little girl here. But,
yeah. Did I hit the wrong button and played her plea for help? Oh,
yeah.
I'm surprised Picard didn't say, like, turn that brat off.
Yes, Picard, because Picard loves kids. Mm. He wasn't too impressed when she came on the bridge, though, but we'll get to that because I have...
I like what Riker said during that little... At the end of that little interview with when she called Worf a coward, because Riker stayed behind and he said, well, what a vicious little circle.
Mm.
And yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. So, of course, here now Wesley saves the day and we should all be thankful and grateful for Wesley Crusher because... Maybe it should be, what would Wesley do? Oh, I know what he'd do. He'd stand there like a cardboard cutout and ask Riker what to do.
Yeah.
Sorry.
He just got to... If only he knew what to do with his arms. He'd take over the world.
You know what? Galaxy. I would just... if I was a director, but a kid, just, you know what? Fold your arms. Fold them.
But you look
ridiculous.
But... You see, he's been taking too much of Riker's advice because Riker has that awkward Mary Catherine Gallagher arm crossing again where he just tucks his hands right in his armpits.
I would threaten to sew his thumbs together. There you go. There you go.
Kirk knows how to take care of that.
I don't have to worry about nothing.
Hey, oh,
I could use duct tape, but I'll fucking sew them instead.
Significant moment in this episode. Not the first time ordered. But the first ever, ever sip of Earl Grey tea.
Oh, yes.
Mm.
There you go. Significant. Why do all the real significant things usually happen in, like, the poorer episodes? Do you ever notice that?
Yeah.
Like, all the firsts are in, like, yeah, this was the first time that Riker did this, and it was in, like, Code of Honor.
Yeah.
Ooh, because I want to go back and watch that over and over again.
I think because all of the first episodes were shitty.
Yeah.
And therefore the firsts end up being in the earlier.
So how many rules is Data breaking when he brings her on the ship? When we meet her, she has the creepiest fingers in the history of ever.
What the hell could those be adapted for? Picking your arsehole? Like, Jesus Christ. Reminds me of this one clip I saw with this elephant that totally took its trunk and dug shit from within another elephant. No, from within. Reached like a meter inside the other elephant and pulled the shit out of its hole.
Thank you.
And then ate it. And then started eating it.
You had to. You could have ended it with the pulling it out of his ass, but no.
You of had course, to eat you it. Could use those fingers to stick in tree holes to get bugs out or something like that.
Yeah. I think they must have spent a lot on those on that makeup, that prosthetic fingers.
Those were terrible.
Yeah,
well, you can see where they began.
But she kept showing them because she held her hands up to get in the door. And then whenever Troy tried to get her on the bridge, she's like, no, hands in front of her face constantly.
Yeah.
They're just like, show those off, kid.
Spent well, a lot. When Data brought her to the bridge, I thought heads were going to roll there. Yeah. You could tell, you know what? Picard was quiet. Picard was fuming. That's how Frenchmen fume. Yeah. They're very quiet. But you could tell he was
fuming.
Even
until they start cursing in French.
Yeah.
He wouldn't even look at the kid.
No, he wouldn't even look at or Data. He's like, get to your position. Get to your station now. I'll deal with you later. Get to your station. Yeah. Actually, Picard does say mère a few times during the series, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a French word for shit.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Picard swears. Not in this. Yeah. You think he would have there. I was waiting for it.
Yeah.
No.
Like, is there, like, could you have done anything worse? Like, maybe, I don't know, aside from engaging the Klingons the Romulans?
Like, bring a child on the bridge.
And I think I gapped here at this point. But what did they do to save the planet?
Yeah, they neutralized the dilithium crystals inside the planet.
Okay.
I got a little something on that, too.
Okay. And then they erased her memory, right? Mm-hmm. Just brought her back down. I don't know. I think I was just a little bored with this episode. It was a little boring.
It was not very exciting.
It wasn't very interesting. But yeah, I don't know.
And it wasn't good. Like, it wasn't interesting and it wasn't good.
No.
It could have been, like, you know, kind of a boring episode, but still good. But no. Just awful.
I you know what? It was all the West stuff that just slowed everything down.
Yeah.
I think the episode could have been better if it was just...
There's no...
There's the double story.
Yeah.
Which ended, and then West saves the day.
Do you think this
again?
Do you think this inner conflict they all had with the whether to help them or not? Do you think that would actually be a real, like, wouldn't they just help them?
If they, yeah, see, that's
they did it in Star Trek Into Darkness. If they destroyed the volcano.
If they can just fire,
yeah.
Wait, let's not go there.
If they can just,
they're already emailing.
If they can just fire photon torpedoes or whatever at the planet and fix it.
Yeah.
Then
yeah,
just do it. Yeah.
Was there that much of a conflict there then? We could probably fix this when we know we were there.
You know, and when they get into space travel, you could be like, you know, we saved your asses, eh?
Yeah, you owe us.
You guys would be like fucking floating in lava right now.
Yeah. So you have something we want there on the planet. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. We saved you. Yeah. Really, wouldn't it just be like, yeah, you know what, Captain? We could just fire that there and they wouldn't. None the wiser. Sever communications.
Yeah, too much time. Too much time.
Yeah, too much time. No, let's beam the android down and
yeah,
it's much more logical and much more
Well, even when Data says, "Oh, I'll bring it myself," and then he's like, "Oh, what's the difference?" And Riker's like, "You know the difference." Well, yeah, we do know the difference. There's a huge difference.
I agree with you though. Data was playing them like a harp from hell.
Yes, I like that saying.
Yeah, because he and which is. Something that Data shouldn't really do, but knows how to, apparently.
Yeah.
Because he was pretty subtle, but it worked.
Just
it all
a
worked
little
in his favor.
Step deeper in the hole just every time.
The one playing the audio was the best one, though. Because as soon as he did it, I was like, oh, I saw what he did there. You so did that on purpose.
Like, he could have friggin' muted that.
Let me just play this last plea for help, Captain. Oh, it won't it won't shut.
Oh, it's, it going, shut it's just off.
Going
oh, louder.
I pressed the wrong button. I made a mistake.
Oh, the sever button. Oh. Right? Not the plea for help button. No. So what are your scientific observations, Kirk?
I got quite a few of them.
Oh, here we go. Here we
All
go.
All right. Here we go.
Now, folks, we had the discussion about the religious science. Now let's discuss some real science.
Yes.
All right.
Okay. Oh, I was talking about radio frequency waves, right? And how Data discovered that's how he was talking to Sarjanka. And I don't think people really understand what radio frequencies are. And they are light. They're light just like the light we see.
Yeah.
And actually, something cool about radio frequency waves, they're like what determines whether a light is radio frequency or if it's an X-ray or whatever. It depends on its wavelength. And if light is just like a wave, it travels like a wave through space up and down in a direction, and it can be polarized one way or another. There's a different ways to polarize it so you can make it wiggle which one way or the other. But our radio frequency waves, they're actually 10. Well, they start at about 10 meters between the peaks, and they can go on to larger than football fields for radio frequency waves. And then if you look at something a little smaller, like microwaves, which are between 1 meter to 1 millimeter, roughly, between the peaks, and that's the stuff that cooks your food. Then you look at something like infrared would be the next thing, which is like about 1 millimeter to 1 micrometer. In length, and it only gets smaller. It goes all the way down to, well, you got the visible wavelengths, which are right in there, which are very tiny as far as looking at the whole spectrum. Then you got, you have infrared, the visible light waves, ultraviolet, and then X-rays and gamma rays, which are very nasty.
The Hulk doesn't like them.
Well, he does like them.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Bruce Banner doesn't like them.
That's right. But they're pretty cool.
Mm.
Actually, it takes about
a meter of concrete.
What, do you have three full pages of notes, scientific notes?
No, no. I just have stuff in the middle. Oh, and that dilithium thing. They found dilithium in that planet, right?
Yeah.
And they said that's what was causing the... they said it was a piezoelectric reaction in the crystals that was causing the planet to heat up. Now, piezoelectric, this is actually used in a lot of places. What it is basically is it's the ability of a material when put under mechanical pressure, like you hit it with a hammer or you push on it, once you distort the shape of it, it'll actually build up electricity in it. And you can do the opposite of it. If you put if you put an electric charge on the crystal or whatever, it will change in size. So if I could see how this would happen, if there was like a lattice of crystals and the pressure was deforming them, causing electricity, causing heat, then releasing that, it could like make a wave sort of inside the planet, bouncing back and forth, this heat energy and mechanical energy sort of bouncing back and forth and getting more and more intense until it rips the planet apart. Which would be pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Is that on that other guy's list?
I don't know.
To destroy
I didn't see that one. But let's be honest here. Dilithium.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's none.
There's none.
So
not yet.
So I don't know if you could have actually if any of the materials that we know of now could create that kind of a feedback if there were to be some kind of a lattice system inside of a planet or somewhere like or inside something that, you know, we're so I don't know if that is actually possible.
Yeah.
But the theory, the idea behind it, it does have some merit. Some merit.
Not much.
Not much. Some.
All right. Is that it?
I think so.
All right. Sherry, what's your rating for this episode? I don't think it's down in like the 0 to 1 category. It's a little better. It's no 2. It's no code of honor, but
2, I guess.
2.
I was thinking even lower than that, maybe.
I'll give it a 2.5 because, like I said, half the episode should have been thrown away, and the other half was decent.
Yeah. No. I'm giving it a 2. I didn't really find it that interesting. It didn't capture me.
They raised some interesting questions.
And it should have captured me because it was like a real big Prime Directive type of episode and everything. But, and yeah, it lost Wesley points, which is what they'll be known as from now on.
Wesley points. Those are negative points.
Yeah, those aren't positive. Yeah. All right. So is that it for today then?
Yeah.
All right. Next time we have probably the most significant episode to date of Star Trek TNG. We get to meet a certain race, a certain cyborg race, a certain cyborg race that likes to assimilate
and fly in cubes.
They like squares.
Yeah,
they like squares. Yeah, and we also get the return of another character who we all know and love.
The Ferengi?
Even more dangerous than these said...
A certain whimsical guy. A certain whimsical...
It's a Ferengi, right?
Omnipotent guy. 2 for the price of 1.
Yeah.
We get to meet the currently and what will become TNG's most significant adversary. And we also are introduced to their most dangerous adversaries. It's all relative because... Q can be dangerous when he wants to be too.
Yep.
It's kind of a toss-up. Who's TNG's greatest adversary, Q or the
I
poor?
Like Q because he had Wesley stabbed once.
Yeah, he did.
He saved him, but he did.
Greatest image in the history
of TNG. I wonder if Wesley got to remember that. The pain of being stabbed. I would leave him with that if I were Q.
All right. Well, next time, very significant. I can't wait to watch this one and review this one. We get to meet the Borg for the first time ever. We hope you'll join us as we explore Q Who. So until then, for Sherry and Kirk, thank you for listening, and we will catch you down the road.
Hailing frequencies closed.
This has been a Naked Wizard Media production. Executive producer, Carrie Kinney. For more information, visit nakedwizardmedia.com.